This is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty. As the two Korean leaders ended a three-day summit, they visited the symbolic Mount Paektu volcano near the Chinese border. Wednesday, North Korea's leader Kim Jong-un pledged to dismantle key missile facilities and offered to close the country's main nuclear complex pending U.S. reciprocal actions. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said Washington is prepared to resume talks with the North and offered to meet the North Korean counterpart at next week's U.N. General Assembly session. Pompeo called for the North's complete denuclearization by January 2021. Wednesday, South Korea's President Moon Jae-in said the Korean people have lived together for thousands of years, and it's time to end 70 years of hostility and take a step toward peace. But RAND Corporation defense analyst Bruce Bennett said despite its pledges, the North continues to build up its nuclear capability.
There's really nothing in the summit that's going to stop him from doing that. I think President Moon likely tried as hard as he could, but I don't think Kim Jong-un has decided yet that he really is going to do this. I think he's playing for time.
Asia Society Policy Institute analyst Daniel Russell, a former diplomat, said summits and promises are no substitute for a negotiating process. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, nearly 30 people are believed to have perished when an overloaded riverboat capsized late Monday in the Mongala River. 30 others survived. Zambian President Edward Lungu sacked his development minister on Wednesday, a day after both Britain and Finland suspended aid over suspicions some $4 million had been misused. Emmerine Kabanshi was responsible for the country's social payments programs to rural areas. A preliminary investigation revealed some of the funds were used to pay ministry retirees and refurbish offices. This is VOA News. The annual U.S. report on terrorism was released Wednesday, showing a drop in terrorist incidents last year by one-fourth, but the terrorism landscape has become more complex, with groups like Al-Qaeda and Islamic State dispersing beyond the Middle East and using clandestine tactics. Ambassador Nathan Sales is the State Department's coordinator for counterterrorism.
ISIS, Al-Qaeda, and their affiliates have proven to be resilient, determined, and adaptable. They have adjusted to heightened counterterrorism pressure in Iraq, Syria, Somalia, and elsewhere. Foreign terrorist fighters are heading home from the war zone in Iraq and Syria, or traveling to third countries to join ISIS branches there.
The report said most attacks last year occurred in just five countries: Afghanistan, India, Iraq, Pakistan, and the Philippines. British Prime Minister Theresa May in Salzburg, Austria, Wednesday appealed to the European Union to soften its bargaining position in negotiations aimed at so-called Brexit, that's Britain's exit from the EU next March.
The proposal that we have put on the table for our future relationship, I believe this is the right proposal because it maintains frictionless trade. It's the only credible and negotiable plan on the table.
EU Council President Donald Tusk has indicated elements of the British plan are unsatisfactory. President Donald Trump Wednesday toured flood-hit areas of the Carolinas following last week's hurricane, promising strong federal support in the recovery process.
We will be there 100%, and all of the folks from the federal government that are around the table, they're confirming it. That's why we started early, and we'll be here late.
The storm killed nearly 40 people. Thousands are still in shelters, hundreds of thousands without power. Swollen rivers continue to threaten communities. The UN Wednesday said Colombia's acreage of coca, the raw material for cocaine, expanded nearly 20% to a new record last year, 171,000 hectares.
Y la meta nuestra.
President Iván Duque said his goal is to eradicate more than 70% of the coca crop. He said aerial fumigation would be restarted if approved by a court. Mexicans observed a moment of silence Wednesday, marking the one-year anniversary of a devastating 7.1 magnitude earthquake that killed hundreds. It was followed by an earthquake drill. Others demonstrated against poor construction methods that resulted in collapsed buildings and higher death tolls in Mexico City. A far more destructive quake hit the city in 1985, killing thousands. More Palestinian protests along the Israel-Gaza border Wednesday and another fatality, a 15-year-old near Rafah. It was the third protest this week. Recurring demonstrations along the border have occurred since late March. Dozens of Palestinians have been killed in clashes with Israeli soldiers. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, September 20th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Tensions are high in Kampala, Uganda, as parliamentarian Bobi Wine is set to return home today, Thursday.
We've received several warnings from the police that they will not allow people to go and receive him or to stand by the worksite to wait for him.
Menda Segonda is Bobi Wine's lawyer. Tanzania's main opposition Chadema party says it will no longer participate in the country's electoral process. One of the journalists who broke the news of Liberia's missing millions of dollars says his life and that of his family has been threatened. And war-torn Somalia says it's ready to send peacekeeping troops to Sudan.
The picture IGAD is trying to bring out is that they have been able to stabilize Somalia. Now Somalia is stable enough and we can have their troops being deployed to other countries where we have turmoil. And I think this is a wrong notion because at the end of the day, Al-Shabaab is still thriving.
George Musa Mali is director of the Center for Risk Management in Africa. Zimbabwe's government pledges funds to fight cholera and Sierra Leone's Anti-Corruption Commission sends a warning to FIFA. Those stories plus our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Tensions are high in Uganda's capital, Kampala, as parliamentarian Robert Chagulai, publicly known as Bobi Wine, is set to return home today, Thursday. Bobi Wine has been receiving specialized medical treatment here in the United States after he says he was beaten and tortured by Ugandan security personnel. The Ugandan government has denied torturing the MP. Bobi Wine left the United States Wednesday for Uganda. His lawyer, Menda Segonda, says Bobi Wine's supporters have been gathering in the capital to welcome him. But Segonda says Ugandan police have threatened to arrest anyone who would line the streets to welcome Bobi Wine.
From the people's perspective, I think he will receive a warm reception. The people are eagerly waiting for him. There are those that are opposed to him, those that do not support him. We've received several warnings from the police that they will not allow people to go and receive him or to stand by the roadside to wait for him. There was a tweet by the national police that say anyone who goes on the streets or the roadside to wait for him will be treated as a criminal, even when they do not cite a particular provision of the law that will be offended. So I think that makes the situation tense, because the supporters on the one hand say they will receive him, and the police and the army on the other side say, no, we will not receive him. So my expectation is that he'll be arrested at the airport. He will probably be taken to some unknown destination, and eventually, well, they will release him because there is no charge under the law that they can place on him.
You talk about the police warning people not to go in the streets to welcome him. The police have said that they have no record of a clearance, suggesting you have to have clearance to go in the street. Talk to me about the issue of clearance to protest in Uganda.
No one is saying they are going on the street to protest. They simply want to stand by the roadside to receive what they support. Obviously, the law requires that you seek clearance if you're going to hold the public. And there is no such a thing being planned. Nobody wants to go and organize a public rally. Nobody wants to go and carry out a demonstration. There's no demonstration being planned. Nobody stops me from standing by the roadside. And we're talking about a highway. We're not talking about people standing or moving in processions on the No, people are talking about standing by the roadside. That one doesn't require clearance.
Your client, the Honorable Bobi Wine, is charged with treason. The charges were dropped in the military court, but they are in the civilian court. How are you going to deal with this case in case it comes up in the civilian court?
Well, the case still stands in the civilian court. I cannot tell you of the strategy, first of all. And secondly, our preparation will depend on the kind of case they bring. We haven't been served with the documents, the exhibit, with the statements written at the barracks or anywhere. So I cannot speculate on the kind of case they're going to bring. I consider the case politically motivated and it's trumped up. So we're just prepared.
Menda Segonda is the lawyer for Ugandan parliamentarian and popular musician Bobi Wine. He spoke with me from the capital, Kampala. The Somali government says it is ready to send troops to South Sudan to help with security and enhance peace. The statement comes days after the regional bloc IGAD proposed that countries like Somalia, Uganda, Sudan, and Djibouti be allowed to contribute to a South Sudan joint peace force amid questions about whether the Somali government can contribute troops while being protected from the militant group Al-Shabaab by African Union troops. Mohamed Yusuf reports.
Speaking in Mogadishu, Somalia's Deputy Education Minister Abdirahman Jabir said his country will not hesitate to contribute soldiers to South Sudan. Some may ask, how is it possible a country like Somalia, that is coming out of conflict and enmity, can contribute to a peacekeeping force? What is stopping us from contributing? Just the other day, Burundi was at war. They sent us troops and helped rebuild our country. What is stopping us from taking part in peace building in other parts of Africa where there is conflict, he said. The Regional Bloc Intergovernmental Authority and Development proposed that Sudan, Somalia, Uganda and Djibouti forces to be included in the peacekeeping force already stationed in South Sudan to help build peace and improve security. George Musumali is director of the Center for Risk Management in Africa.
The picture IGAD is trying to bring out is that they have been able to stabilize Somalia. They're just playing with the minds of the people that now Somalia is stable enough and we can have their troops being deployed to other countries where we have turmoil. And I think this is a wrong notion, because at the end of the day, Al-Shabaab is still thriving.
The UN mission in South Sudan has 17,000 troops whose mission is to protect civilians, creating a safer corridor for delivering humanitarian assistance, monitoring and investigating human rights violations. Amnesty International has accused South Sudanese forces and militia groups of committing widespread abuses against civilians, attacks that have continued. The proposal to include Somalia has raised questions about whether that nation can contribute troops to the force while its population and government are under the protection of the 22,000 African Union troops. The African Union forces, with the help of Somali government soldiers, are fighting the militant group Al-Shabaab, which has threatened to topple the internationally recognized government. The United Nations has more than a dozen active peacekeeping missions in the world, and more than half of those are in Africa. Over the years, the less powerful countries in Africa have contributed to the peacekeeping missions in conflict-ridden countries like Central African Republic. Musumali says they need to stabilize South Sudan.
Somalia is not ready to have our troops used outside our borders. In fact, we should be enhancing the numbers and at the same time equipping them better so that they can deal with the problem within their borders, not removing the small numbers that we've already trained and equipped to manage other jurisdictions, yet they are needed at home.
The South Sudanese government and opposition groups signed a peace agreement last week intended to end the five-year civil war. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Tanzania's main opposition Chadema party says it will, for the time being, no longer participate in the country's electoral process because Tanzania's most recent by-election had been militarized by the government. Party President Freeman Mbowe said Wednesday he will ask the Court of Justice of the East African Community and the African Court on Human and People's Rights to set up an independent electoral commission in Tanzania. Mbowe said going to vote these days in Tanzania is like going to war. Helen Kijo Bisimba is a retired member of Tanzania's Legal and Human Rights Center. She says the optimism that most Tanzanians had when President John Magufuli was elected in 2015 has now been tempered by his gradual anti-democratic moves.
Yeah, for me, I've been following elections since we began Magufulism in this country, and you can see there had been some irregularities here and there, but this time I would say it has become worse. And the opposition, especially Chadema, they get a lot of problems when they go for elections. When they go to the election, some of their party people who are supposed to watch out in the election, sometimes they are not given the papers in time, or when they are given the papers, they are rejected in the last time. Sometimes there are people who are being abducted, some of them are being arrested. And this has been very bad, the last by-elections, and now this by-election last week. So I think that's why maybe the chairperson of Chadema have decided that the party have decided to boycott the coming elections until further notice.
To those of us on the outside, it sounds very strange, because when President John Magufuli came to power, there was this optimism around Africa of a new dawn in democracy in Africa. It sounds very depressing now to hear the main opposition in Tanzania saying that it can no longer participate in the election because of what Chadema is calling excessive militarization of the electoral process. What's your comment?
It is true. When the president came into power, everybody was very optimistic that things are going to change, because he came with a very good idea of going against corruption. He was bringing discipline in the country, especially with the people who are working with the government. But things changed, especially with the opposition. He declared that he will make sure that by 2020, the opposition will not continue to be there. But later, all the political party work was also stopped by just an announcement. And now, most of the time when the opposition parties want to do their meetings, rallies, especially the rallies outside the meeting, the big meetings, they're not allowed. Even sometimes even the meeting inside the houses, not the big rallies, they're not also allowed. And this might happen when they are having their public meetings. So it has become very, very rough on the opposition, especially the main opposition party.
Helen Kijo Bisimba is a retired member of Tanzania's Legal and Human Rights Center. She was speaking with me from the capital, Dar es Salaam. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, September 20th. And please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Let's send shout out to listeners on all our VOA affiliate stations around Africa. Daybreak Africa time, 17 minutes past the hour. Zimbabwe President Emmerson Mnangagwa says his government will assist municipalities struggling to fight a cholera outbreak that has killed 32 people and affected more than 3,000 during the past 3 weeks. Columbus Mavunga has more from Harare.
After visiting the epicenter of the cholera outbreak in Harare, President Emmerson Mnangagwa vowed to help the Harare City Council with financial assistance and called on the corporate world to donate toward fighting the epidemic. We are raising money, which has been coming daily, so that we fix the best pipes at Mota Jeffrey Waterworks and the Central Business District, as well as the suburbs, he said. We have been told that these pipes are old and are bursting at any given time, so we have found some well-wishers who are helping us, said Mnangagwa. We will continue to support the Harare City Council in its programs to sanitize Harare, because the council does not have enough powers to be doing all the work alone, said Mnangagwa. Nearby, David Shoniwa, a vendor in Glenview, the suburban epicenter of Harare's cholera epidemic, says there have been improvements in the area's hygiene since cholera was detected, but more is needed. The situation is better now, he says. We have been receiving clean water and we have got buckets, but it has not been possible for everyone to get something because there are difficulties which others have been encountering, said Shoniwa. Tuesday, a UN spokesman in Zimbabwe, Serac Gebrehot, said a UN Emergency Response Fund may be activated as the cholera outbreak spreads to other parts of the country.
In light of the appeal announced by the government of Zimbabwe in response to the cholera, the UN has scaled up its support. The regional office of the UN Humanitarian Affairs has already deployed 3 emergency and humanitarian specialists in the ongoing response. This is in addition to our colleagues from UNICEF and WHO who have been already engaged on the ground in this emergency response.
In 2008-2009, a cholera epidemic killed nearly 5,000 people. It only stopped after international organizations such as the USAID, Doctors Without Borders, the Red Cross, and the UN agencies, including UNICEF and the World Health Organization, provided medicine and water treatment chemicals. Columbus Mavunga, VOA News, Harare.
In Liberia, as investigation continues into which government ordered and brought about 16 billion Liberian dollars into the country, the publisher of the Hot Pepper newspaper, who was one of the journalists that first broke the news, now says he and his family are being threatened by unknown individuals. Philbert Brown says armed men visited a store run by his wife and asked whether the store belongs to him. He also says the newspaper staff have been receiving threatening calls from private phone numbers.
As you may be aware, I was the one that actually broke the story of about the missing billions in Liberian dollars. So we're talking about close to anywhere between 110 to 120 million United States dollars went missing. I broke the story, and then after 2-3 days, the government decided to come up with a press release. But right now, as I speak to you, I got my children, everyone crammed with me right in my bedroom. There's so much threat on my life, so much threat on my family life. My wife runs an electronic store. She cannot go to a store tomorrow because our men visited a store and threatened that they would kill her and kill me. My children can't go to school because they've been threatening them. Anonymous callers been calling them that they will kidnap them, they will assassinate them. The newspaper couldn't work. It came up, but we had to deploy security at the newspaper office. They had to leave work at 6 today because anonymous callers been calling, threatening my life and threatening their lives. Interestingly, me and my wife were having dinner a few hours ago when a friend of hers called her to warn her that her husband was in a gathering and there are plans that armed men are going to storm my house tonight to have me assassinated.
If these allegations are true, this is something that's supposed to be handled by the police. Have you talked to the police?
Yes, I called the police director immediately. The police director responded. He sent the zone director, because I live in the Pinsville Belt. He immediately sent the zone director. They came here. I came, went downstairs. I spoke to them. The police director himself came. And when he came along with 20 armed police officers. As I speak to you, there are 20 armed police officers right now deployed in my yard in case of any eventuality. So I don't know how long the police will be able to sustain this protection of me and my family, but my kids cannot no longer go to school. They are all afraid that when they leave, they're going to get killed or people are going to kidnap them as they are making the threat. I just want to say thanks to the police director for even coming and deploying men at my compound right now. We all are keeping awake in case of any eventuality.
I'm wondering, what is the ordinary Liberian person? What are they saying in the streets of the capital, Monrovia, where you are?
Well, in all fairness, the ordinary Liberians are angry. And, you know, you wish for the best, but we are also preparing for the worst. We know they are angry. We know there are going to be demonstrations. People are going to get into the street. There are music now being made. We want our missing continent of money back into the country. Is that a wallet that was stolen? You're talking about billions of billions of Liberian dollars. You're talking about 100 plus million United States dollars, and they want the money back.
Philbert Brown is publisher of the Hot Pepper newspaper of Liberia. He was speaking with us from the capital, Monrovia. Sierra Leone's Anti-Corruption Commission chairman says the World Football Governing Body, FIFA, would be engaging in double standard if it went ahead to ban Sierra Leone from international competition. Francis Ben Kaifala says Sierra Leone is trying to enforce its own anti-corruption laws. This comes after the commission raided the offices of Sierra Leone Football Association and forced its president, Aisha Johansson, and her secretary general, Chris Kamara, to step down over allegations of match fixing involving the national team. Kaifala says FIFA should instead be applauding Sierra Leone for fighting against corruption.
Before I became commissioner, she was charged with 8 counts
charges of corruption by the Anti-Corruption Commission. And there is a provision in the Anti-Corruption Act, Section 134 of the Anti-Corruption Act, which says when a person is charged with corruption, that person should be suspended from office and should be receiving half pay pending the trial. What happened in her case is that she didn't step aside since she was indicted in October. So after I took over, I reviewed the situation and found out that it wasn't good for the fight against corruption. For somebody to be standing trial for corruption and the person continues in office as president of the Australian Football Association. So the commission gave her 7 days notice for her to vacate office and hand over to her deputy. And after the 7 days, we moved in and cordoned off the office and ensured that there was that enforcement of that law.
Mr. Chairman, when you say corruption, she was charged with corruption. Does the corruption have to do with the Football Association or Sierra Leone government matters?
Yes. It concerned Sierra Leone Football Association money. But under the Anti-Corruption Act, when you receive money on behalf of a section of the people of Sierra Leone or generally for the people of Sierra Leone, it will be considered as if it is government money and the Anti-Corruption Commission has jurisdiction over you. So the SLFC, the Sierra Leone Football Association, which was established by an act of parliament, which receives money from the government of Sierra Leone, which also receives money on behalf of a section of Sierra Leone for football in the country, is definitely under our mandate and is covered by this provision of the law.
I want you to respond to what some people are suggesting. There was an article saying that Sierra Leone faced the prospect of a ban from international competition by FIFA after the country's anti-corruption commission followed through on its threat to raid the opposition of its football association on Tuesday. That you faced the Sierra Leone. What do you say to people who suggest that?
What I can say with regard to that, if FIFA goes ahead and bans Sierra Leone because we are trying to enforce fairly and equitably the law of our country, which means that no one person should be above the law, then FIFA is engaging in serious double standards, and it is by itself doing what should not be done because corruption should not be encouraged by FIFA. If somebody is charged with corruption and the law says this should be the consequence of that, FIFA should allow that to happen because it is different, for example, if we were going there to say, no, this person should not be president, it is this person should be president. That would have been a clear interference. That would have been an interference. But in this situation, it is what the law says that is being enforced by an independent commission, not the government of Sierra Leone. It is not an interference into football. Football will play. The vice president of the Sierra Leone Football Association is an official of the association. In the absence of the president, the vice president steps in. So we are not even going there to say, no, the vice president should not be the president of FIFA. We are saying, by law, the president who has been charged and the secretary general who have been charged should not continue in office. If FIFA comes to us to say they are going to ban Sierra Leone because of that, that would be a clear case of double standards. What about their own government in Zurich? Did the Americans not get involved for people to be arrested and charged with corruption? So because we are a small country, we cannot take decisions as to what our law says and enforce them.
Francis Ban Kaifala is head of Sierra Leone's Anti-Corruption Commission. He was speaking with me from Ghana's capital, Accra. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Tensions are high in Uganda's capital, Kampala, as parliamentarian Robert Kyagulanyi, popularly known as Bobi Wine, is set to return home today, Thursday. And that's it for this Thursday, September 20th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Reiki Shryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Greg Barnes, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good day.
Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.